It's time once again to step out, step up, and step into the Coming Out Lounge, a safe space to be you and your truth with Coming Out Coach Rick Clemons. Rick's expertise in the coming out process has helped hundreds of men and women ignite their inner desires to powerfully step out of the closet and into the light of living authentically as gays and lesbians. Freeing you from the feelings of guilt or shame, Rick offers take action tips for basking in the glow of self-love, easy to implement tools for wrapping yourself up in the warm embrace of self-acceptance, and take it to the bank advice on how to step courageously into a powerful, purpose-filled life on the other side of the closet doors. Each week, the Coming Out Lounge brings you heartwarming coming out stories, insights for living authentically as a gay or lesbian, and challenges you to step out of the ordinary and into your extraordinary life. Pull up a chair, cuddle up with the truth of who you've always been, and let's spend an hour in the Coming Out Lounge discovering how to energetically step out, step up, and step into living your truth. Here's the host of your show, Coming Out Coach Rick.
Hello, Closet Busters. It's time once again to stop the closet dwelling and to step out, step up, and step into living your powerful truth. And part of that powerful truth is really opening up to an invitation to love yourself, to love others. Because you see, coming out is kind of a challenging place where we're asked to move beyond our fear and our pain and our resentments. It's also that place where we can make some chess moves, so to speak, towards forgiving ourselves and others, so that we can actually move forward into the intended place of being exactly who we're meant to be, just as we are in this world. But then the question often becomes, well, how do you do this? Well, today's guest, Darren Pierre, who is the author of the book Invitation to Love, Recognizing the Gift Despite Pain, Fear, and Resistance, is going to be sharing with us how we can move through this. In his thought-provoking book, Darren has really done a really great job of using stories and metaphors to establish three strong tenets of how you can truly learn to love yourself. The first one is live your truth, the second is to persevere, and the third one is to have a healthy disregard for the impossible. I love that one. A healthy disregard for the impossible. And I say amen and hallelujah to all that. So Darren has basically stepped beyond his rural roots of North Carolina and become a fixture in the higher education community. He's not only got his master's, he's got his PhD, and he's also found who he truly is, himself as a man. Ready to invite others to partake in love in the same way that he's done so that they can find their truest self and live their most wonderful, authentic lives. Welcome to the show, Darren Pierre.
Thank you, Rick, for that warm, warm introduction. I feel like I should have recorded myself so I can play it back when I'm not feeling that way about myself.
Well, you'll have it very soon. We'll be, you know, saving this up and putting this out very soon, so you'll have your own personal copy of it. But I want to say, man, I'm really excited to have you here, and I have been flipping through the pages of your book for the last week or so, trying to read as much as I could, and a lot of it has really moved me. It's just been really moving to read some of those beautiful words that you put together in the pages of the book. So what was the inspiration for the book?
Well, I had read this amazing work called A Course in Miracles, and it's quoted often by Marianne Williamson and others, and Jordan Bach, who's a really great thought-provoking spiritual leader who identifies as gay, also quotes it. And the book is really an understanding of how we can extrapolate for ourselves where love is present and where fear is covering that love that's there from being fully seen and from that expression being fully manifested. And I was in the throes of doing my PhD, and I believe that's one of the greatest spiritual journeys because anytime you're in a challenging, rigorous, self-reflective process, inevitably I believe there's some components of spirituality in that.
Sure.
So halfway through that process and really spending time with good text, A Course in Miracles, I really felt called to write a book. And when I finished school and moved to Chicago, I came here and I was like, I don't really want to write. I just want to go watch baseball and football games on television and just live my life on the beach. But like anything that's part of your truth, you can't find yourself at full peace, full contentment, and full joy until you respond to the call that's on your heart, whatever that call may be. And for me, at this time in this season, the book was it. And so I began the process of writing and started that in late 2013, working with the publishing coach of that process, and now here we are today.
Wow, that's awesome. So I get this piece of, you know, suddenly you feel like you really want to just do what you're called to do. That I think that's very prevalent right now. In fact, most conversations I'm having with people in general, I'm hearing that undertone a lot in our world these days, that there's just this yearning and desire to really go do what you've been called to do. But prior to getting that calling, there were some challenges you went through in your younger life as far as loving yourself and caring for yourself. Why don't you kind of take us back a little bit to what was going on in your younger life?
Yeah, so I'm the oldest of four kids. And my mom, for a majority of the time I was a child, was the primary caregiver. And she, trying to navigate her life, struggled financially. We spent time on financial assistance. My dad wasn't very present in the home. My mom would find herself in relationships with men who weren't able to care for themselves, care for her, and in turn weren't able to care for the kids she had. And so that just started this pathology of low self-worth. And coupled with that was experiences of physical and sexual abuse. So it was the trifecta of my mom and her navigating young adulthood and me experiencing some of the scar tissue from that. It was me having my dad not be a present fixture in the home, and when he was there, I didn't experience him as well as either one of us would have liked. And then these incidences of abuse that really kind of created these, it created this space where I moved into a realm of overachieving. So I found my escape through school. And so I would go to school every day, and it became like a safe haven. Like when I was at school, I felt free. And what I got a hold of during my PhD process was that all of the accomplishments and the accolades were just really covering up the pain that was there from those three areas, from my mom and her struggles, from childhood abuse, and from the absence of my dad. And the book was really my honest narrative or testimony, as some would say, to those things that I spent so long suppressing,
right,
by overcompensating in those other ways.
So this is not uncommon, I think, and I hate to say that, that a lot of people go through some form of this trifecta, whether it's the sexual abuse, the verbal abuse, you know, having this low self-worth because mom's always out working, and then, of course, then dad's not a very, you know, present figure in life. But to have gone through that and to have felt this, and then suddenly as you're working on your PhD, for this to really come rushing forward, that must have been quite the phenomenal feeling to finally realize what the waves were that were crashing over you all this time.
Oh, absolutely. And it was scary and it was jolting. And I believe anyone, whether you're going through a PhD or whether you're going through whatever it is that may be the experience for you, we all have those jarring moments where we're introduced to the truth. And the truth is, are we moving authentically with what our life is called to do, or where are we moving inauthentically? And so for me, I had went to college and I had gotten a master's degree and I worked really, really hard, and here I was in the PhD program, and people around me, and for me for a long period of time, thought, oh, Darren's just, he's driven and he's motivated and he's an inspiration. But really what I was doing was compensating for places of pain. So here I am in a PhD experience, and I'm introduced to the fact for the first time, am I doing this authentically, or is this me continuing to keep myself busy and distracted from not dealing with the things of my past? And so at that moment, I'm left with answering that calling. Where is this me being authentic to who I am, and where is this me moving in a space of inauthenticity to cover up pain? Analogy I use with people is sometimes when we lose a family member, or if you've seen other people lose a family member, you'll see that they'll start cleaning up their house, or they'll do things to stay busy because that's how they're grieving. So some people will sit and they'll experience those feelings, and then other people will distract themselves. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just a natural pattern that many of us flow through in our lives, and certainly we experience that in these magnified moments of like grief of a loss of a family member. But you can also experienced that in the elongated experiences of dysfunctional relationships or abuse or whatever. All those things are still the same coping mechanism of being busy or being distracted to not deal with those things in the past. I think a lot of gay men who are struggling with coming out of the closet are in that same type of space.
Yes, I would agree 100%. In fact, it's very prevalent, especially in gay men. And I don't want to, you know, set aside our lesbian sisters or our bisexual or transgender brothers and sisters, because I know for each person it's a different experience. But I think this piece that you brought up, that much of what we try to hide behind or put in front of us to keep from dealing with things from our past are actually the things that can often be very self-deprecating, even though in the moment we don't really see it that way. You know, we may be out having a good time at a bar, drinking, this becomes our pattern and everything, but what we don't realize is that is actually the thing that we are using as a coping mechanism to keep from facing some of the truths of sexual abuse or absentee parents or whatever it may be. So for you, it sounds like this began to really truly bring things into focus where you could see things from a different perspective. I'm curious, how did that begin to impact your life as the focus became clearer?
The focus to write the book or the focus to...
Well, just focus in life in general. I mean, you're starting to have these epiphanies, so to speak, of, okay, wow, I know there's something more here and I want this book to get written. And as you started to write the book and you started to see the words flow, what started to happen for you personally?
Well, it was a scary and it was a jarring process. And I really believe that you can't talk to people about the village if you never resided in the village yourself. And so here I was writing a book with these three tenets: living your truth, persevere, and have a healthy disregard for the impossible. And the process of writing that book was all of that. Living in my truth of saying, there's a story that I need to tell. And not everyone will be supportive of it. There'll be many people who are, but there'll be some people who are not. And not for any other reason than it is confronting for them in their own truth. You know, it's a tangential piece. I love what is happening in the conversation with Caitlyn Jenner right now, because what she is doing is she is giving everyone the greatest invitation to find the courage to live their truth. And some people are going to be able to celebrate that, and some people will go to the high hills away from it, because what it does is it makes them be confronted about things they haven't come up with in their own lives. And that's exactly what I experienced with this book. You know, before I started the process of writing the book, there were many people who were able to celebrate the things that I was doing, because they were like, oh yes, follow your dreams. Well, once you really start to put pen to paper, then the people around you experience you a little bit differently, because they're called to the things that they aren't doing in their lives. And so living in your truth is a lonely process, and it can sometimes be painful. And the process of writing this book, at many moments, were some of the loneliest moments that I've ever known, and they were some of the hardest moments that I've ever known, but they were the necessary moments that put me to a place of really understanding what it is I need to do to love myself. And I believe this book is a clear physical manifestation of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this piece that you just shared, that you can't talk about the village unless you lived in the village, as soon as you said that, I'm like, okay, that's like an Oprah tweetable moment right there. But it's so true. You know, it's one of those pieces where, as much as we may feel that, okay, we're ready, we're going to come out of the closet, we're going to be who we are, we have to realize that there are pieces of ourself that, until we've allowed them to be who we are in ourselves, that no matter when that doorway opens and we walk through it, we're still going to have pieces of ourself we have to go live with. There's pieces of ourselves that we may have hidden through the coming out process by saying, oh no, I'm heterosexual, I'm, you know, oh, I can date regular, you know, heteronormative stuff. You know, all that stuff starts to show up. Yet what I've found as I've worked with clients on the other side of the closet door is, many times once the door has been open and they walk through, the bigger challenge really begins then. It's because there's other stuff that's going to show up that they haven't necessarily come to terms with. Maybe it is the loss of a parent. Maybe it is the absentee parent that wasn't around. It could be, you know, the sexual abuse or the physical abuse or the mental abuse. Any of those things can show up. What I often find, though, is when we take this step and we walk through the doorway, we also invite ourselves to open up a lot of other stuff that is sitting there so that we can truly begin the healing process. And I'm wondering how that may have manifested for you as you opened the doorway and you started to write this book. There must have been numerous healing moments for you along the way.
Absolutely. Rick, absolutely. There were so many moments along the way. First, there was the introduction to the reality that living in your truth is a difficult process, and even when you do it, it's not going to always be easy on the other side. You know, a lot of people say, I'd love to be a millionaire. But if you ask most millionaires if their life is easy, they will tell you it is not. The bigger the expression, the bigger the challenges on the other side. I mean, everything that you're going through is preparing you for what you asked for. Mm-hmm. That's from Ibram Hicks, and I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. And there was healing in that. There was healing in the recognition that just because you're doing the right thing doesn't mean it's going to be easy. To the contrary, if you're doing what is right, it probably won't be easy. If you want to live a comfortable life where you're not fully expressed in your closet, it may be very easy for you. Mm-hmm. But to live out who you are in that full place of liberation is not going to be easy. The other piece of healing for me with the book was the understanding that some things are so universal. Some things of love, of fear, of joy, of pain, they are universal. I have heard from people from all walks of life, different races, different religious backgrounds, various sexual orientation, various gender expression, who've all connected with the book in different ways. And that's a beautiful thing, because there's healing for me in the interconnectedness of our own narratives. We're all wondering, am I enough? And am I okay?
Well, I think you just brought up something really important. I don't want to lose it. It is that interconnectedness to ourselves that will catapult us forward in this journey. Whether it's the journey coming out to say I'm gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, or if it's catapulting us forward to say, no, I no longer want to work in corporate America. I'm meant to be an entrepreneur. It is that trusting of ourselves. In fact, there's a quote from your book that I just loved, which is, in a world riddled with fear and insecurity, people can only celebrate others up to the point that they can celebrate themselves. And as soon as I read those words, I was like, oh my God, this is so powerful, because we tend to be able to really celebrate others. From an outside viewpoint looking in on our lives, we celebrate celebrities, we celebrate wins at work, we celebrate all this stuff, but are we fully celebratory? Are we fully celebratory in the way that we can be? Because the one thing that's missing is we tend not to celebrate ourselves. And I think that was kind of the point you were trying to make there.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for me, whenever I know I'm in that space is when I experience jealousy. I rarely find myself jealous of other people. But when I do, it is the greatest invitation that there is something that I'm not doing in my own life. So if you're out there and you're like, oh, my best friend has been losing weight, now she's doing triathlons and I'm just feeling a little bitter, there's something in your life. Maybe it's your health and fitness. Maybe it's your relationship with food, whatever it may be, that you're not doing, that you're not fully celebrating within yourself, that's causing you to be jealous of the situation of someone else. And so I do believe that as we celebrate ourselves, which is be who we are and to try to move forward with courage and tenacity in that space of truth, we find ourselves being alleviated from some of that burden of jealousy or resentment of others, because we began that process of celebrating ourselves.
Well, the jealousy piece is huge, and I think a lot of people go, oh, I'm not a jealous person. But what they don't realize, the simplest thing is actually spawning jealousy. It could be, oh, it would be really nice if I had something that looked like that in my house. It may not be like you're saying, oh God, I want that so bad, but that little lingering thing. And sometimes even the jealousy shows up in a very veiled way. It could be, oh, I'm so impressed and happy for who you are, but you can just tell by the tone of voice that there's no genuine, authentic, you know, admiration happening in that moment. And when we get into this jealous space, it is the thing that distracts us most. I think it was Franklin D. Roosevelt who said, the comparison of others is the greatest killer of our joy. And I really love that concept, because each time I find myself starting to compare myself, whether it's to another podcaster or another speaker or someone who is doing similar work to me, or even those who are like in better shape than me, I realize immediately the moment that that starts to happen how much I lose myself. I literally completely lose myself in that moment, because I'm trying to be something that I think everybody else would admire me to be. And the moment I'm looking for that validation is the moment I can't stand fully, truthfully in myself being me.
Oh, 1,000% agree. And that one of the great truths of life is that you have been given what you have the capacity to receive.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to someone the other day. Their financial portfolio looks incredibly different than mine. Incredibly different. I was like, wow. That's a level of wealth I don't know. And they were telling me a story about a recent impasse that they had had with a close friend. And this had been a friend for years. And I was just so taken aback. I was like, oh my goodness, like that is really, really difficult. And it was about money. Mm-hmm. It was about money. And I was thinking, I don't know how I would be able to deal with this. As he was telling me the story, I was like, I don't know how I'd be able to deal with this.
Right.
And at that moment, I said, and that's why I don't have to deal with that at this time. That is why he has zeros that I don't have. Because at this point in my life, I don't feel like I have the capacity to respond well to that level of conversation.
Mm-hmm. And I think what you just brought up is very similar in the coming out process, that we are only given what we can handle and what we can truly deal with. And I know for many people, the challenge comes from being able to be yourself, and then you may get thrown out of your home. The challenge may come from you, like me. I came out late in life, and so the real challenge was, will I ever be able to have a relationship with my children, or will I ever have what some aspect of the relationship I had with my ex-wife? So each of these things are given to us in the capacity that we can actually receive, and I truly believe that we can handle. And oftentimes I think we miss this piece. And if I was going to share anything, you know, today from what we've been talking about, is realize as you're coming through these doorways, whether it's coming out because of your sexual orientation or coming out because of some other thing in life, maybe it's divorce or coming out as a single parent or coming out as, you know, I want to be a musical star on the Broadway stage and I'm going to leave my corporate life. No matter what it is that you're coming out of, it is those moments where you give yourself full permission to realize as you ask for what you desire, you'll be receiving exactly in the capacity that you can handle. And I think a lot of people miss that, and I think it's a very important piece to cover. So there's another expert from your book that I really love, and I'm just curious what spawned this one, and I'm sure there's many of them in there for you, but one of the ones that I read was, if I can't keep my word to myself, how will I ever be able to keep my word consistently with you? And I read that and I thought, okay, wow, that one is pretty powerful. So something obviously brought that forward. Was it an incident, a particular situation that brought that statement forward?
Yes, there was.
Mm.
There was. I was with a family member, and she had borrowed some money from another family member of ours. And she had said, she said she's going to pay the family member back at a specified time frame. And she didn't pay them back. And the disappointment that family member had and my mom not keeping her word, because this other family member of mine was in a space where they had often experienced mistrust and distrust. Mm-hmm. And so for this other person not to keep their word was just an exacerbation of what was already there for them.
Right.
And so I just got a hold of, well, I understand how she didn't keep her word with you and paying you back, because she doesn't keep her word with herself.
Mm-hmm.
She had for years been talking about what she wanted to do differently with her finances and what she should be doing. But she had never made the words into committable deeds. And she had said for years about other things in her life that she hadn't made movement on.
Mm-hmm.
And what I got a hold of is if she or me or you or anyone else, if we can't keep our words with ourselves, how will I ever be to keep my word with you? And for us, for people who are on the receiving end of someone's inconsistent behavior, look at their life. That friend who every week they're on a no-fab diet, like, right. Oh, this week they've decided they're going to do this, then the next week they've decided to do this, and next week they're going to decide to do this. Okay, well, you can clearly see that they're not keeping their word consistently because they made a commitment last week that they were going to, you know, go on the Atkins diet. Then they quit that to do something new. You know, when people can't keep their word consistently with themselves, then that gives you a clear indication of their ability to hold that word consistently with you. And what is powerful for those of us who are inconsistent in our words, when we get a hold of that inconsistency and we begin to change it, then we have the power to manifest what is there for us. But life can't give you what's there for you because you're too busy vacillating on who you are and what you are and what you're about in the world. Like, life can't give you the powerful, healthy human being you want to be if you can't consistently keep your commitment with yourself. So there's something on the other side of this current hurdle that you are not manifesting because you're inconsistent in the practice of keeping your word with yourself.
Powerful. In fact, as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, one of the most consistent things that we can do, and ironically, of course, it's in the title of your book, but as we come through the closet doors, amongst all those that will embrace us, in the midst of all those who will turn their backs on us, the most consistent thing I believe we can do is love and care for ourselves. Because the more we can do that, if everything else were to fall apart, as long as we loved ourselves and cared for ourselves, that's all we really need. Now, I know some would argue, but no, I need friends and all that. I agree. I get that piece of that. But at the end of the day, if none of that was available to you, as long as you had a steady, strong, loving, caring relationship with yourself, you would be amazed at how different things would sound and how different things would be for you as someone who is coming through some very big doorways to try to be more truthfully who you are in your most purposeful self. So I got question for you.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Darren. Go ahead.
I was just going to say I 1,000% agree. And in addition to that, I would say that there are so many times where we want to lecture people and preach to people about what they should be doing in their lives, but we don't hold the mirror up to our own. And the most effective teacher to other people is the practice you put in place for yourself. If I want you to be kind and loving towards me, I've got to mirror that for myself, being kind and loving to myself. And, you know, I was talking to a friend, and he was dealing with a friend who was going through a challenging circumstance. He's like, I don't know why he doesn't have the courage to change the situation. And I was like, I don't know why you don't have the courage to quit your job and do what you're passionate about. I said, people can't take you seriously in what you're preaching to them when you're not living it out yourself. So when you love yourself fully and you have the courage to move in that space, you then, as a byproduct, have friends who move in different spaces, who have family members who move in different spaces, because you no longer just preach something, but your life is a manifestation of those values. And you'll never have to tell people. You don't have to tell people to live in your truth. You don't have to tell people to manage their money effectively. You don't have to tell people to think about their relationship with their self. They will see your life, and by your living, they will know exactly where your values fall and your expectations of them if they want to hold company with you.
Absolutely. And, you know, you're bringing up something that a friend of mine and I were just talking about yesterday, which was how much people use, and I'm not saying this out of judgment, I'm just saying it more as a space of just, here's a matter of fact. We as humans tend to use certain words to qualify who we are and how we are, and that's just the way we're going to be. That's the human race. But we're talking about people who say, oh, you know, I'm very much a person of integrity, and I really stand in my integrity. And I've always felt that the more you have to say it, the more you're trying to convince yourself that's what you're doing. I mean, I hold myself in a very special space of integrity to make sure I try to be there, but that's about all I say about it, is that I do. I hold integrity very high on my list, I don't necessarily say I'm going to go out there and say, yes, I'm a person of integrity. And if I do, and somebody who's been listening to this hears me say that, I want you to remind me of that. But I find it very interesting when we start to use words like integrity and authenticity, and then that becomes the words we say, oh, yes, I'm very authentic. I'm very integrity, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think it's just we need to look at the mirror and we need to go, okay, am I walking the walk and talking the talk, or am I telling the talk more than anything? So
absolutely.
So we've got to wind this up here, but one of the things I always do at the end of each show is I ask the question, you know, what would you love to leave with the listeners who are struggling with coming out and trying to make this journey forward? What would be the one piece of advice you would leave with them?
The one piece of advice that I would leave with people is a story. A couple of years ago, I was at a church, and I think this story relates to anyone of any faith or no faith tradition. I was at the church, and they were talking about Barack Obama, and they had the little O with the little rainbow symbol of, you know, hope and, you know, from Noah's Ark and the flood or whatever. And they said, you know, a lot of people think of Obama like a savior, like he was Jesus, you know, this whole save us from whatever. And they were like, I think that Barack Obama, like Jesus, was sent here to show people, to not save people, but to show people how to save themselves. And I thought to myself, that's the most profound thing I think I've ever heard, that a Jesus, and whatever context you want to think of that Jesus character, was sent, or the story or the narrative or the experience was here to show people how to save themselves. That man lives a life, and this is for anyone. You live your life trying earnestly to live in your truth. And through it all, there will be times where people celebrate you. In the story of Jesus, there was that Palm Sunday. They were waving palms, and they were very celebratory. By Friday of that week, they were putting him up in this whole space of a crucifixion. And that's called life. You will be celebrated at moments, and you will laud in that celebration. But there will be moments where you'll experience your own Friday. But when you have the tenacity to persevere and have a healthy disregard for the impossible, you will find yourself on Sunday, which was Easter. Sunday, this man with great strength and great vitality is like, I went through that storm and I came out on the other side and I'm better, more powerful for it. But so many times we get stuck on Friday and we revert back to that Monday where the palms were there. We get to the place where we're almost about to come out. We get to the place where we're almost about to make a new career move, and we see a rent check or a family member who says something that's homophobic, and we're right there sitting on Friday. And we either have the courage to stay there, and like a Jesus, if Jesus was sent here to show us how to save ourselves, we say, like Jesus said, these people forgive them, for they do not know what they do. And those people who come your way, who aren't for you, who are helping you experience a Friday that's terrible, you say, you know what, they don't know what they do, and I must keep on this path that I'm on, knowing that Sunday is guaranteed on the other side of this Friday I'm currently experiencing.
I love that. I love it, love it, love it. So, Darren, if somebody wanted to connect with you and your book, where is the best place for them to connect?
Absolutely. So they can go to the website, theinvitationtolove.com. So that's theinvitationtolove.com. You can Google it. On there you can find the different resources that influence the book. You can find ways to connect with me directly. And then there's also links to Barnes & Noble and Amazon and other online retailers for you to purchase the book if you want to continue the conversation that way. But for those listeners who do purchase the book, I hope you do reach out to me after purchasing and let me know how you connected to the concepts therein, because this is an ongoing conversation that I am excited for readers of the book to help me co-construct as we continue what I believe is such important conversation around how we allow love to combat fear.
Absolutely. And speaking of important conversations, as we wrap it up here, one of the best ways to continue any of these conversations with me and my guests is to tweet me at Rick Clemons. That's at RickClemons. And that would be the Twitter handle for the show, as well as the hashtag Coming Out Lounge, pound Coming Out Lounge. And of course, we've got the Coming Out Coach Facebook group you can always connect to us with as well. And finally, as I always say at the end of each show, one of the things that really moved me today, and it's going to be a little bit of a departure from what I would normally end the show saying, but this time I want you to really consider not just stepping out, stepping up, and stepping into living your powerful truth. I would like to encourage each and every one of you to step out, step up, and step in to the invitation to love, and that starts with each and every one of us in ourselves. I'm Rick Clemens, the host of the Coming Out Lounge, and that's it for this week. We will catch up with you in just another week. Have a great one, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us today with the Coming Out Lounge with your host, Rick Clemens. Make sure you tune in with us next week, same time, same place, for the Coming Out Lounge.